What's going on, everybody? This is King Ricky Rose, your general manager of WrestleAddict Radio, and you are listening to Kings of the Rings podcast, a 2024 nominee for Best Wrestling Podcast by the Sports Podcast Awards. Coming up this week on Kings of the Rings podcast, you know, they say if you want something done right, you just have to do it yourself. And that is exactly what I'm doing. I'm doing this whole show by myself. It's a little bit of a special royal edition of Kings of the Rings podcast as I go through AEW Revolution from a couple weeks ago. Some very interesting legal disputes coming or legal information coming out from WWE and that Vince McMahon lawsuit. WrestleMania is really starting to kick up. People are slapping people everywhere. There are a lot of receipts getting thrown all over the place, especially from the checkbook of Tony Khan. So sit back, relax, and do not worry. I am not going to scare you like Katie Britt did after the State of the Union. It's Kings of the Rings podcast, episode 370, Slap Happy, a very royal and only royal edition, exclusively here on WrestleAddict Radio. And it starts right now. And I am serious, folks. If you have not seen Katie Britt's speech after the United States State of the Union and or, more importantly, the Saturday Night Live cold opening, you definitely need to stop what you're doing, stop what you're listening to right here and watch that right now. I will tell you right now, you will not be disappointed. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Kings of the Rings podcast, episode number 370, Slap Happy, exclusively here on WrestleAddict Radio. I am your host, your only host this week, King Ricky Rose. Thank you for joining me on the solo mission, the solo quest that we are about to embark on this week for the podcast. Will obviously is awake. Kayfabe is somewhere. Kayfabe will be returning. Will and Kay both will be returning in the next couple weeks as we do our WrestleMania Super Show, which is bound to be a very, very interesting time in a couple of weeks as we are going to transition probably to a new day to record live. So this is going to be an audio-only recording of the show this week. No live. I'm not going to do it live this week, so it's going to be really funky when we return for our next couple of episodes, and it's going to be a number missing, but you know what? That's just what I decided to wake up and do today. So thank you guys for joining me on this episode. If you like what you're listening to, again, I don't want to say listening to this week, but if you like what you're listening to, please make sure you like, share, subscribe, leave us 5-star reviews wherever you're listening to us on the interwebs, on your favorite podcast site, and more importantly, on WrestleAddict Radio, the cure for the common wrestling podcast. So it's been a couple of weeks, excuse me, since we've been on the show. And last time we did do the show, I had my second favorite Canadian, Mr. Fretz, with us. I had Willie T with me as well. We were going through AEW Revolution and my number one favorite Canadian in our stream and controlling the chats and everything like that. And we were going through AEW Revolution, everything going on in the world of pro wrestling. And so the big thing a couple weeks ago was obviously the end to the career of the icon Sting and the AEW Revolution card as a whole. And I will tell you this right now, before we get into everything regarding Sting and everything that occurred during the match, AEW Revolution was a good show. By and large, very good show, a lot of good competition, a lot of great work. The stories, in my opinion, are getting better. You guys know that. Myself and Willie T, we've been kind of not really focusing on AEW too much, and they're putting out good content. I'll give the devil its due. They're putting out good content, but to us, we are still very compelled by everything going on in WWE, and we'll get to that. But this is AEW's time to shine, in my opinion. Probably top to bottom, this was probably their best show I've ever seen them put on. From an in-ring perspective, from a story perspective, the crowd was really hot for them. You know, when you have such a marquee match like Sting's last match, and that is the only thing really people are talking about, it's very easy for a crowd to overshadow the other matches and not really be into it for the entire time. And for by and large, they were into almost every single match, except for one match in particular where I thought the crowd was noticeably dead, much to my chagrin, of everything else going on. I mean, the card top to bottom was great. I opened up well. I didn't think the TNT Championship match was going to go as well as it did, but it did. You had the tag team match between FTR and the Blackpool Combat Club, which was great. They had to, unfortunately, replace Mead Madness, which is like, that's like one of the only things I was looking forward to. But they got to replace because some people were injured or things taken away from that. Most of the matches hit. But let's get to the nitty-gritty. Let's talk about the Icon Sting and his final match. It was an interesting little homage they did to have a kind of a classic Hollywood trope. I guess it's a classic Hollywood trope of Sting himself being in a theater watching highlights of his career. Very noticeably, only highlights of mostly WCW stuff, which I was very interesting to see that they got the rights to use some footage from WCW, because the rights, the intellectual property of WCW, is one that is owned by WWE and TKO Holdings. I found that interesting. There was no WWE content from Sting in that video montage of his career. Again, very interesting. And there was not any real video footage of his time in TNA Impact Wrestling. Again, very interesting. So, and there, of course, there was a lot of his video footage of him in AEW, because that is the that's the company that he's been working for the past couple of years. But I found it interesting, not more so not having WWE content in that video package. And I can understand that there might have been some pushback from the powers that be to hand over some of that footage. I don't even know if it was even requested. But I did find it a little interesting that none of his time in Impact, especially with the iconic Joker Sting, not being used as some sort of footage. Again, I don't know if they requested it, or I don't know if it was even a thought when putting together the video package. Because again, it was mostly very, very old WCW, very quick clips and footages, and then just clips of his time in AEW. And I understand you want to highlight AEW, but in my opinion, you know, this man's career spanned over 30 plus years. He was worked in almost every major promotion in the world with a lot of Hall of Famers. And I feel like the video package was kind of short and lacking in highlighting all of the things that he did. And there might be, you know, some legal things that got him away from that. But as a fan of somebody of Sting for a very, very long time, ever since my childhood, it felt like we were shorted a lot of that looking back at his career segment that it was supposed to be. First thing. Otherwise, it was good. You know, he spoke to the crowd. He came out. He had his sons come out in different parts of his gear, like the original Sting, the red, white, and blue, and then Wolfpack Sting. Again, no Joker Sting. No Joker Sting. Very interesting stuff. And the match happened. It was it was tornado tag match. It should have been like a tornado Texas death match, to be honest with you. I don't know if anybody's ever done such a thing, but it was a tornado tag match. A lot of bumps, a lot of high spots. Sting jumped off something high, go figure. And it was not interesting, but I was surprised at the level of hardcore extreme brutality that they decided to go with. Tables, ladders, chairs, oh my, that was probably going to happen in some way, shape, or form. However, glass, like solid panes of glass, was a lot. I thought that was pretty extreme, very extreme to the point where you had Darby, they had like four or six chairs on the outside, and they had one of the Bucks on top of these chairs, which was already covered with that pane of glass. And then Darby went on top of a ladder from inside the ring, tried to do a swanton from outside the ring. Obviously, the Young Bucks moved out of the way, and he fell flat on his back through this glass pane in a very gruesome manner. And he immediately started bleeding out from almost half or the entirety of his back. And he was out for a very, very long time. I mixed that with some other kind of insane spot, not insane, but very extreme and somewhat dangerous spots in the Orange Cassidy match, which Orange Cassidy lost the title. Found that very interesting, as well as in the very brutal and probably the best match on the card was between the Don Callis family, Ospreay and Konosuke Takeshita. Fabulous match, by the way. Very strong style, very extreme, very what I think AEW is going for. But however, it was interesting because Al Snow, former WWE superstar, and he worked in OVW and he did a lot of stuff for WWE Tough Enough and everything like that. Al Snow was on a Vince Russo show, so take that as you may. And he talked about his concern for AEW's talent safety or lack thereof. You know, AEW's known in and of itself for testing limits, giving a lot of creative freedom inside and out and outside of the ring. And Al Snow is questioning how much of that is actually necessary to continue to go on. As good as it is to have freedom in the ring and be able to do what you want, maybe when you want to do it and not be so structured, there has to be some sort of middle ground, in my opinion, you know, because the most important thing in any performance, remember folks, wrestling is a performance. It's performance first, sport second. It does take parts of sports, but it is a performance. It's a choreographed performance. And the biggest thing, to me at least, is the safety of the people performing. And AEW doesn't have the greatest track record when it comes to the safety of their performers, especially in big events when you're already going to be pushing the limit. The Darby Allin spot was a great spot. It was a brutal spot. It got the job done. But my question, was it necessary? What is the reason for that spot to be going down? I don't know if it actually added to the match or added to the story, because the story was Sting going out kind of on his shield. And you can say Darby taking things too extreme, left Sting all by himself, so therefore he had to fight both of the people. I kind of get that as well, but sometimes, you know, you got to protect the performers from themselves. You really do. And Al Snow brought up a point where, based on AEW's track record, it's very clear that they don't have really rules about things they can or cannot do in the ring, or maybe even putting limits on the extremeness of each match. It's one of my gripes with AEW is that at times it can look very chaotic, and what are the rules? Is anybody even abiding by the rules? And that does work for them to an extent, but also it's also what makes it indie-rific and sometimes not great TV. It becomes more of like a bloodbath instead of like a story that you're trying to tell. It is still a sport, and AEW tries to lean more so on the sport part, but you still have to be entertained to the point where you can tell a story. And with people, when someone who's new to your product's coming in, you have to have some sort of organized structure so people know what's going on. And again, the most important thing is the safety of the performers involved. And Al Snow brought up a great point. He mentioned that at some point we're going to have to put some rules in place, or else if they keep going at this rate, they keep on trying to push these limits of what they can do, we are going to watch someone die on TV. We are going to get your Owen Hart moment. And there's a lot of people who praise AEW for not playing by the rules and taking things to limbo. But there is a consequence for that. And if you don't want to see another Owen Hart consequence of that action, you have to start putting in limitations to what you are allowed to do on a week in and week out basis. You have to do that. You need to protect your employees. You need to protect the performers from themselves. And I hope we never have to see an Owen Hart moment on TV. But we also got the powers that be at AEW, pretty much just Tony Khan, the end all be all, has to start putting his foot down and stop being a fan and start being somebody who's running a company that's trying to compete with one of the biggest companies in the world. Sting went. Sting and Darby went, which another point I thought was interesting as well, because Sting, I take Sting as being a very old school guy, and you always want to put talent over on your way out. The saying is you always go out on your back. And I guess the counter to that is that the Young Bucks are already over for the most part to most, you know, more than casual wrestling fans. And so maybe they didn't need to get put over by Sting, but it's always kind of weird when they don't do a job. I know this whole thing was like Sting going out on his own terms and never thinking he would wrestle again, but it was just an interesting call for Sting to go out with the win. He goes undefeated in AEW, for what it's worth, with wins and losses in professional wrestling. He goes out undefeated, 25-time champion. His tag titles are the last titles of his career. It seemed to be a pretty interesting moment. It was a good match. Entertaining match, but, I enjoyed watching it. I just have concerns, like Al Snow said, about the lengths that the performers will go to say this is art. You know, either you're trying to do art or you're trying to kill yourself. Pick one. Just let us know, and then we should be able to adjust accordingly. Overall, like I said, AEW Rebels card, one of the best cards, might be even the best card they've ever put together, top to bottom. The crowd was into every single match, except for the women's. Which is a shame, because there's a lot of talk about Timeless Toni Storm and how she's so entertaining and how everybody's so invested in her in AEW, and that she, for some people, might be one of the best parts or if not the best part of AEW in recent days. And the crowd was not there with them for the majority of that match. It may have been due to the other matches on the card leading up to their match being very, very good, very exciting. The crowds are into them. It may be the fact that Toni Storm versus Deonna Purrazzo was the only women's match on the card, and it was for the Women's World Championship. And it seemed like the crowd just couldn't give a shit, which is a shame, because the one part you're hearing that Toni Storm's this great figure, this great character, and everybody loves her, and then it seemed like it was a dud out there. And it wasn't a dud. It was a really good storytelling match, but it seemed like it was a dud. It's interesting with the AEW women's division, because you have Tony, you have Deonna, you're obviously trying to tell an extended story here, and I think there's an already great story built in. But I feel like the crowd needs to start investing in the women's stories and stuff as much as they do all the men. And granted, it's a very dominant male roster, very, very dominant AEW male roster. But they have some great talented women, and they're not really getting highlighted outside of a few. Now, that might all change, to be honest with you, because as of this recording, it's been revealed about an hour or so ago from this recording that my favorite current wrestler of the modern era, Mercedes Moné, formerly known as Sasha Banks, has made her long-awaited debut, back in the United States, and has been revealed on TV to have signed with All Elite Wrestling. And you guys know I wasn't going to do a show without probably commenting on the boss or the CEO or some people who are just finding out that she's been calling herself a CEO because she's been calling herself the CEO ever since she showed up in New Japan. So welcome to the party, guys. It was interesting to me that she showed up in AEW given the lack of effort or the lack of, not lack of effort, but more so like a lack of care to the current AEW women's roster. Deonna Purrazzo should be legitimately a good get for them and something they can build off of. But when you have the match that they had at Revolution and it seems like no one cares, they also have another secondary women's title that wasn't even highlighted on the show at all, which is very concerning. So you bring in Mercedes, you bring in Sasha. I'm going to use that interchangeably, so get fucking used to it. You bring in Mercedes to a very fledgling women's division, and maybe in hopes that she can bring more eyes to it and bring more content to it. But for that to also occur, you have to start investing, and that's the word I'm looking for. You have to start investing in your women more. And Mercedes Moné, Sasha Banks is an all-time major get for AEW. Absolutely all-time major get for AEW. She's a hot commodity. She is at the point where she actually does not need pro wrestling because she's in Star Wars. Okay? She's a Mandalorian in Star Wars. Her star power is probably the biggest star power they've ever had in the AEW women's division. So, in my opinion, they needed her more than she needed them. In my opinion, I thought she might have been better suited just from the way that they're utilized on TV. I thought she would better suited for a return to WWE than as AEW. But hey, I guess money talks. At that point, I can't blame anybody for taking their money. But it might be a big lift for Mercedes and Sasha if they're going to put a lot of that on her. She automatically overshadows all the women in your division, including your champion. And with what happened at AEW Revolution as any indication, this could do more harm than good for your already established talent that are somewhere on the roster. You just can't find them, or they've been shelved in Ring of Honor. Because yes, Ring of Honor is where people get shelved at this point in AEW. It's one of the biggest things I disliked about AEW is that they took a really hot commodity in Ring of Honor and a lot of rich indie history and put it on the shelf for all intents and purposes. Tony Khan wasn't done with opening up his checkbook because he also revealed on the Dynamite after, or AEW revealed on the Dynamite after Revolution, the number one since Sting and Darby Allin won the match and that Sting essentially retired. The tag titles are going to be up for grabs. They're going to be vacated because Darby's not going to defend by himself, clearly. But also revealed that he signed Okada. So a big 1-2 punch in 2 weeks in a row for AEW with Okada and with Mercedes Moné and Sasha Banks. Okada also baffled me about his signing, again, which is probably just clearly a money thing that may have occurred with all of this. Okada baffles me because he left New Japan to be full-time in AEW, although he was already working in AEW beforehand and keeping his New Japan schedule. So it felt like a win-win. So I don't see what really is the difference here, especially since he's made a splash. And I thought it would make more sense to me that Okada was going to show up in WWE some undefined territory. Like, you can be legends everywhere all you want, but there is something about doing what you do at the highest level that you can do it in the biggest promotion that you can do it at. And so I thought Okada was a sure fit for WWE. However, money talks, clearly. And I understand WWE is a completely different monster than any other wrestling promotion that there is out there. And it does take some sort of adjustment. It's something that Mercedes Moné is already accustomed to, something that probably took Okada a little bit more time to adjust to. The only thing that I can think that brought Okada back for, or Okada the AEW right now in a more full-time basis, was that he has to finish a trilogy with Bryan Danielson. I think that's the only thing in my mind that would bring Okada there to AEW, is to finish this thing with Bryan Danielson at one of the upcoming pay-per-views, which I guess AEW announced at Revolution. They're coming out with another pay-per-view called AEW Dynasty. I remember when AEW had only four shows, and then you had these random Dynamite shows, which could be pay-per-views. Your Winter's Coming. Big Business is the night of this recording, which was just for Mercedes Moné to show. So you could have just called it Dynamite, just have Mercedes show up, but you got to make a name for it or a one-off thing that may probably never even return. But AEW Dynasty is going to be the newest show, and it's almost at this point. I really got to look at their list of shows at this point. But it appears that AEW might just have the same number of pay-per-views as WWE on a year-by-year basis. And if they don't have it this year, they're going to have it next year. I don't know where that comes from, because AEW didn't want to have initially this many shows, these monthly pay-per-views, but it looks like they are slowly assimilating to that model of these big pay-per-view shows on a monthly basis. Interesting, because of some of their issues with making and turning a profit, which might change on the short side of things with Okada and Mercedes, and then we see how they're used, and it might not, go that way. Like, listen, AEW has had a track record of signing big names from WWE, whether they're legends or people who really didn't get a fair shake, like Keith Lee, Edge, Christian, so on and so forth. And not many of them have had sustained success when they moved over, to the point where some of them started coming back, like Andrade. So with that being said, I don't know if it is wise for AEW to move in this manner so quickly. Again, I don't know where this is coming from. There could be a corporate push for it, especially with TBS and TNT and Max and HBO Max, because no one calls it Max. HBO Max, just like no one calls Twitter X. HBO Max trying to do live streaming and stuff like that. There might be a push for that, so that they get as much live content, and having AEW as part of that live streaming content on their Bleacher Report live section of it could work for them. I just don't know how it's going to pan out for them. But we'll see. We will see. Crazier things have truly occurred in the world of pro wrestling. And now we're coming up to the big part of the year, obviously, for in all of the pro wrestling world, regardless of what you watch. It's WrestleMania season in less than a month, less than 30 days. It's coming up. And it's very interesting, and maybe not interesting at all, that as we're getting close to another big major WWE event, some very big news drops regarding former head of the board, TKO Vince McMahon, former WWE chairman, all of that stuff. I'm always interested in the timing of these things getting leaked to us, because it just seems odd. It's like they're deliberately trying to stifle the company's biggest shows with this very negative news. And not that we don't need to know this information. I think it's important to know this information. I'm just interested as to why did they wait till now for this to come out? What is everybody trying to do here? I'm not saying it's a witch hunt, but I'm just saying the timing's kind of funky. That's all. It happened at Rumble. It happened before Rumble, and then it happened. It's happening right now before Mania. Again, very funky. And SummerSlam, with SummerSlam just being announced for Cleveland, don't be surprised if something else comes out around that time as well. It's a pattern, I think, here. Anywho, I'm going to read to you from what I got. Front Office Sports reported, and this is from Front Office Sports. So everybody, all the news that you're reading from this, from all of these other quote-unquote dirt sheets and credible wrestling sources, are taking this one report from Front Office Sports, and I want to emphasize that, okay? It is just copy and paste and repeat of one website's report. Okay, so in a report from Tim Marshman, John Pollock, and Brandon Thurston for Front Office Sports, WWE President and WWE President Nick Khan, current WWE President Nick Khan, the good Khan that we thought, and WWE COO Brad Blum have been identified as corporate officers number one and number two within Janelle Grant's lawsuit. The lawsuit has claimed that Khan and Blum were instrumental into a scheme in which saw Grant be employed by WWE in, quote, a completely undefined role except for the understanding that she remained a sexual slave to be used and trafficked by Vince McMahon and within WWE. It also goes on to say that Khan and Blum are accused of facilitating and covering up exploitation that makes WWE liable under anti-trafficking laws in the U.S. Khan and Blum were not named in the lawsuit, but Ann Callis, Janelle Grant's lawyer, has confirmed the accuracy of Khan and Blum being identified as corporate officer number one and number two. You know, it goes on to say about the lawsuit claims that Blum and Khan were presented as McMahon's key fixtures by the then WWE CEO. Within the lawsuit, it states that McMahon held a meeting with Khan and Blum and informed them about the nature of his relationship with Janelle Grant, and both Blum and Khan voiced their concerns, allegedly inquiring about if Grant, quote, could be trusted. WWE spokesperson has denied that this conversation ever took place. It also goes on to state, according to Front Office Sports, all right, corporate officer number three, which is also mentioned in the lawsuit, corporate officer number three is no one other than the billion dollar princess herself, Stephanie McMahon. The suit states that Stephanie motioned Janelle Grant to sit near her at meetings of WWE's executive committee, and that Stephanie McMahon, knew, quote, of other instances of Vince McMahon engaging in inappropriate sexual conduct. It also goes on to mention that corporate officer number four in the lawsuit, according to Front Office Sports, is former general counsel and head of WWE's legal department, Brian Nurse. The lawsuit does not explicitly claim that Khan, Blum, Stephanie McMahon, or Brian Nurse knew about the acts of sexual violence allegedly committed by Vince McMahon. So this is very interesting news coming out right now. Not because of the time, but yes, because of the timing. But interesting to get more information of some of the key players involved, specifically Khan and Brian Blum. It seems like Stephanie was trying to help out this young woman. And from everything I know of Stephanie, that seems about accurate. But it does shine a light on the inner workings of Nick Khan and Brian Blum, these two guys who are, I would say, key players in making sure Vince stayed in power and never got caught. Not that they knew to the extent. It does allege that Vince had a conversation and told them the extent of it, obviously, like I just read. But there, in order to get away with someone like this, again, with trafficking, it's very graphic. There's no way I'm getting around it with trafficking, sexual trafficking of an individual within a company, by the way, if we forget what the lawsuit actually talks about. It takes a team to make sure that gets on the wraps and it gets out of the eye of a lot of people like the FBI and federal regulators and stuff like that. And Nick Khan, for all of the stuff, he seemingly has done well for WWE and making them extremely marketable and more so than before, and the TKO deal and all of that stuff. And Brian Blum, the COO, but more so Nick Khan. if it is really proven that he and Brian Blum in particular were integral in making sure that this stayed out of prying eyes for as long as possible, I believe, in my opinion, that they have to go as well. They do. Anybody involved, anybody who had knowledge, I mentioned this on the show really briefly with Will Gray from Bot Spots and Share Shot. Shout out to those guys. Go follow them. They're great. I mentioned that on the show with him, that if they've all got to go, all of them. Stephanie's already gone. And from what I read, what we read briefly there in the report, it didn't seem like Stephanie was directly in any way, shape, or form involved in the cover-up. But if Khan and Blum were truly involved in such a manner to help cover this up from a financial standpoint, they have to go, no matter how good Nick Khan has been. Go find somebody else. It is, I said it a couple weeks ago. I mean, when this report came out and everything. I also did I spoke about it at length on Down for the Count Wrestling Podcast and all here on Wrestling Podcast. You guys go check them out as well. Shout out to Alexis and Tiff. And I forgot the other girl's name. I'm so sorry. I really, really am. It might be Nicole. Don't quote me on that. However, I said that when I talked about this ad nauseum, reading that was absolutely horrific. And I've worked in behavioral health and mental health for almost a decade. It's one of the most gruesome things I've ever read. And if there were other people, clearly there were other people who were involved or had knowledge of it, no matter where they are on the WWE or TKO hierarchy, they have to go. Nick Khan included. They have to go. They have to go. There's going to be a lot of pushback. There's going to be a lot of legal mumble jumbo that's going to be thrown around. There's going to be a lot of trying to hide and conceal things, which is a shame, but that is the legal system that we live in the United States of America. If there is any inkling of truth or very evident truths that come out that include Nick Khan and Brian Blum in particular, they have to go. They absolutely have to go. Whether it be during Mania, after Mania, part of the Mania cuts, they've all got to go. You know, it's what's in the dark will at some point come to light, and this is exactly what's happening. And we have to make a reckoning, and we have to make, you know, we got to really think about it as people who cover this form of entertainment and religiously watch this on a weekend, week out basis. We really got to look in the mirror sometimes and don't be afraid to hold the people that we look up to accountable, no matter who they are or what they do for as a job. Just human beings make mistakes, and also human beings should be held accountable and punished for their actions when it hurts other people, as it has for this woman, allegedly. Excuse me, moving on a little bit. We're going to move on to breaking down what we know of WrestleMania so far. So WrestleMania, like I said, is less than a month away. It's coming to a big head, and we've got our big matches so far. I think these are the big matches that are going to be happening leading for Mania, and then everything else is kind of going to be filler, you know. So we have, you got the two women's championship matches, Bayley versus Io Sky for WWE Women's Championship. You got Mommy Rhea Ripley versus the Man Becky Lynch, WWE Women's World Championship. I think that's going to be a fantastic match. Should be a marquee match. Gunther is putting his IC title on the line against Sami Zayn, everybody's favorite underdog, after winning a gauntlet match, which I thought Chad Gable was going to get. And I was really hoping Chad Gable was going to get his moment and do another one-on-one against Gunther for the IC title, because they really did put together a fantastic match on Raw, and I would love to have seen that pay off, and I would love to see Chad get a moment at WrestleMania, because let's be clear, Sami Zayn doesn't need a WrestleMania moment. Quote unquote, he had it already. He got it last year. And I think Chad dethroning Gunther at WrestleMania would have made sense. It would have been validation for everything that Chad Gable has done throughout his career. And it almost elevates Chad Gable to a status that he's never been before, closer to a Sami Zayn, closer to a Gunther. And what a better way for it to happen than WrestleMania. But unfortunately, we're not getting that. We are getting Sami versus Gunther, and I'm sure we're going to put on a great story. I know Sami's going to put on a fantastic story. This is what Sami does. This is his wheelhouse. He is the ultimate underdog in this format. I'm assuming we are going to see Chad Gable and potentially Otis in what has just been announced this week on Raw, the tag team ladder match for the unified WWE Tag Team Championship. Judgment Day, obviously, but Tag Team Champions, Balor and Priest are going to be a part of it. And then you have six unnamed teams that are going to, or five more unnamed teams that are going to be a part of this six-pack tag team ladder match and just screaming all the chaos. I'm very excited what's going to be. This might even open up night one of the show. It's going to be a demolition derby and a very exciting way to probably to be a part of that. What they do with these tag titles, whether they do a split finish where one group tag, you know, gets one, or maybe we get a brand new unification of the tag titles either at Mania and with different belts, or somewhere down the road on the Raw after or something like that, that'd be interesting to see as well. And that's also probably preferred in my opinion for myself. What we do know is that night one main event is going to be the tag match Roman Reigns and The Rock versus Cody and Seth, with implications for night two. So if Roman and The Rock win, then Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes is going to be Bloodline Rules, which is pretty much no rules, which is anything goes. If Cody and Seth win night one, there are going to be nobody involved in Cody versus Roman, and Cody and Roman will be a straight-up one-on-one match, no outside interference whatsoever. That's night one's main event. Night two is going to be obviously the main event of Cody versus Roman. What's going to happen in a match, we don't know, because it's obviously going to be very indicative of what happens on night one. However, it's very interesting to note that also on night two, and what they're calling a main event, but it's truly not a main event. It may be a main event style match, but it's not going to be the main event. Sorry, Seth. Seth Rollins versus Drew McIntyre. You know, the other championship feud that no one seems to be talking about, because Seth is so enthralled in this Cody Roman Rock thing. And it's kind of weird. Seth has started to stand up for himself. He got diarrhea joint. He called Rock Mr. Midlife Crisis. It's what I wish. I really, really wish that Seth focused more on the Drew thing, because I think Drew is trying his darndest to get something going for him, and he's not getting there. He's not getting it whatsoever. Seth's not getting his true main event one-on-one WrestleMania. Drew is not getting his true one-on-one WrestleMania main event in front of a crowd. They both lose in this, where I thought it was going to be for sure that Seth was going to get night one, Cody was going to get night two. Now you have this very wild amalgamation of main event matches with these four particular individuals, and Rock, Roman, Seth, and Cody. You know, you have four performers. You have four particular performers in three WrestleMania matches total out of the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. You have, and of the six already mentioned match, seven, sorry. Of the seven already mentioned matches, you have three matches taken up four superstars, five if you include Drew, in the one match. Ugh. To me, I feel like that's a lot. I feel like the match space and match time could be used for other people, for other stories. Then again, the question is, what other stories do you have? Because there's been so much time allotted to this, but with all that time allotted to Cody, Roman, Seth, Rock, does it warrant 3 WrestleMania matches? Does it warrant all that time? I granted, it's 2 nights of WrestleMania. The time of the event is going to be shorter. There's not going to be as many matches as there are in the past, which even more so emphasizes my point. Is this worth 3 matches? I've always been of the mindset of WrestleMania is earned. You earn your spot at WrestleMania. I also understand that CM Punk was going to be there and you're not going to get Punk versus Rollins. You know, I understand that that kind of put a snafu on things. But then you got The Rock and The Rock's trying to save WrestleMania, quote unquote. That was the rumor and stuff. But is this the way to do it? I feel like there are more people on that roster from this past year that have earned some time at WrestleMania. There is also Jay and Jimmy, who have not officially been announced yet, but that's going to happen more than likely. I just hope that something can be done and that more people get an opportunity, but having 4 people take up 3 matches on WrestleMania on a card that is probably in total for night 1 and night 2 be at max 12 to 14 match event between both nights. They're possibly taking up about a third of the card. Not a third, sorry, excuse me. My map is bad. Don't tell my dad, he'd hurt me. Taking up about 25% of the card, a fourth of it. If it's 3 matches and there's 12, yeah. It's going to be interesting to justify, especially when you look at Rollins, who's coming off his knee being quote unquote completely healed and ready to go. Okay, it's going to be hard to justify all of that occurring, but we'll see what happens. I'm excited for it. I'm going to be there. You know, all that stuff is going to plan. Willie T and I will be there. My friend Sir Charles will also be there as well. So we're going to go down and we're going to have a fun time. And it looks like our trip is going to be even more expensive. You got WWE World, you got WrestleCon, and now you have the WWE Hall of Fame, which in looking at it, might be one of the best Hall of Fame classes ever. There are five acts that have been selected to the Hall of Fame. Most recently today, Claude Thunderbolt Patterson was announced as a Hall of Fame inductee, which we are going to do more information about all of these performers on our super show in a couple of weeks. The tag team known as the US Express, something I'm not familiar with them, but we'll do my research. That tag team is going to be in the Hall of Fame, not to be compared with the Rock and Roll Express. Different expresses, different trains. Bull Nakano, a woman who was far ahead of her time, finally getting her just due in the WWE Hall of Fame. You also have Muhammad Ali posthumously getting put into the WWE Hall of Fame, which explains how he was a surprise DLC member or a surprise addition to the WWE 2K24 video game this year. From what I've seen, looks really good. Looks really, really good. And last but not least, and probably the most obvious thing of it all, Paul Heyman, ECW founder, innovator, wrestling innovator, and by and large, might be outside of Vincent Kennedy McMahon, the most important figure in the history of pro wrestling, is going to headline this Hall of Fame class in Philly in ECW's backyard. Wow. It is going to be raucous. I'm looking, Will and Sir Charles and I are looking to get to the Hall of Fame and all of that stuff. It's going to be a jam-packed weekend. It's probably going to be a hell of an expensive weekend, but it's going to be a weekend nonetheless. And I can argue this might be one of the most complete Hall of Fame classes we've seen in a very, very long time. I don't know if we are going to get a Warrior Award recipient as well, but if this stands where it is right now for the Hall of Fame, it is a damn damn good class. And this was a, in my opinion, I guess, for a one-man show, but I haven't done in a long time outside of my personal podcast. Go check that out, by the way. This is a damn good show today. So thank you guys, all of you guys who are listening to us, or listening to me, not us, sorry, listening to me and my glorious voice, for joining us on this episode of Kings of the Rings podcast. So let's get the hell out of here. But before we do, I do want to mention that the next time you'll see us might be in a couple of weeks, or I might just wait until we do our WrestleMania Super Show, which is going to be a very, very long show, undetermined. Will will be there. Kayfabe will hopefully be there unless something randomly happens with their internet, which seems to be a recurring theme at the moment, which is concerning. And we might have some surprises. It's going to be a long show. It's going to be a fun show. We're going to be getting all of our predictions and stuff. And if anything really big happens from here till then I'll probably do a show about it. And I'll probably drag somebody out from the interwebs of my friends and do a show about it. But until then, let's get the fuck out of here, because I do need to drink some water, even though my voice has held up really, really well thus far. So, ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to Kings of the Rings podcast, episode number 370, Slab Happy. I have been your host and your only host, your royalist of hosts this week, King Ricky Rose. You can find me at Ambassador of the Bigs across all social media outlets, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, no one calls it X, some people's DMs, less people's text messages, B-I-G-Z, Ambassador of the Bigs. Find Kings of the Rings podcast at KOTR underscore podcast across all social media outlets. Like, share, subscribe, leave us 5-star reviews. If you're listening to us, make sure you are listening to us on Wrestle Addict Radio, the cure for the common wrestling podcast, home to the Fretzelmania podcast, the Young Lions Perspective podcast, and the Brace for Impact TNA Wrestling podcast. You can follow Wrestle Addict Radio socials at addict underscore wrestle on Twitter and at Wrestle Addict Radio everywhere else. When we come back, we will have some news. What news it is, I don't know. Maybe Tony Khan has signed somebody else. Maybe Cody slapped somebody. Maybe The Rock slapped somebody. Maybe Seth slapped somebody. Maybe Roman acknowledges that he also slapped somebody. I don't know what's going to happen. WrestleMania season is unpredictable, but what it is, most importantly, is that it's been a lot of fun thus far, and it's been so much fun sharing it with all of you. So, till the next time I see you guys or hear from you guys, goodbye, good night. We'll see you soon. I don't know how I haven't slapped Slack. That's a tongue twister right there. Yeah, well, Slack needs to be slapped at some point. So fuck you, Slack. We'll see you next time. This has been a Wrestle Addict Radio branded podcast.